the Line acknowledges this program is produced and presented on the sovereign lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We acknowledge elders past, present and becoming, as well as the owners of the land you are hearing us from. Welcome to Woman on the Line, one of Community Radio's National Women's Current Affairs programs, produced at 3CR Community Radio in Melbourne and broadcast nationally on the Community Radio Network. I'm Ayan Sherwat. It's been almost a month since eligible Australians started receiving their coronavirus supplement. This extra $5.50 a fortnight payment was the government's financial response to the COVID-19 pandemic. While many of us rejoiced at finally being able to purchase basic essentials, others, like those on the disability support pension, missed out. That's not all. Just when you thought living on $40 a day was over, Scott Morrison recently signalled that the payment will not be extended beyond September when it's due to end. This week on Woman on the Line, I'm joined by Kristen from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union to make sense of the coronavirus supplement and why our government insists on punishing the poor. Stick around because later in the show, we'll hear from one of the groups most at risk of poverty, single mothers. So Kristen, let's start with you. Can you tell me a bit about yourself and the work that you do at the Australian Unemployed Workers Union?
Yeah, I'm a disability support pensioner. I am autistic and I'm running the Raise the DSP campaign for the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. And I'm also working on the campaign to abolish mutual obligations and keep the rate of new start with the COVID supplement.
Mm. Obviously, we can't talk about the history of income support, so we'll just focus on New Start Allowance. Can you tell us a condensed history of how we got here when it comes to New Start Allowance?
Yeah, New Start started in 1990. The last real rate increase was in 1994. So John Howard basically froze the rate by attaching it to inflation, and basically, since then, nothing has improved. Nothing improved under the Labor government that started in 2007. And in 2010, Ken Henry delivered a report to the Labor government saying that it needed to be increased. And still, 10 years later, nothing has changed. And we've just had the latest inquiry into New Start published in April, also saying it needs to be raised. And they're now talking about doubling it to be above the poverty line.
There's been calls from all sorts of groups. So you've got business groups, you've got activists, academics. Everyone's been calling for a raise to New Start Allowance. Why do you think government is still reluctant?
I think that it's easy for the government to ignore unemployed people. There's not a lot of sympathy in the wider community because there's a belief that if you don't have waged work, it's because you're somehow deficient or you're not trying or you know, there's the myth of the dole bludger. So I think it's, yeah, the other factor, of course, is that, again, neither Labor nor the Coalition are arguing to increase the payment, and so it's not something that gets any kind of political discussion in the public sphere.
And recently the government introduced the coronavirus supplement, which was an additional $550 for certain income recipients. So not all of them received it. DSP was one of the recipients who missed out. Can you tell us the work that your organisation is doing to change that?
Yeah, so we're trying to put pressure on the government to extend it. It's really important for people to know that the minister was granted extraordinary powers under the COVID legislation. That means she can change this overnight. No new legislation needs to go through Parliament for Anne Rustin to grant this supplement to disabled people and to carers. So we're arguing against this, you know, being excluded because it's discriminatory. The government's own committee found that it's a breach of human rights to exclude disabled people from this payment. And it costs more to be disabled. People have increased medical costs. Many people have not been able to leave the house because of their health conditions. They've been at higher risk for contracting COVID or for being severely affected if they do contract it. And many people who are disabled have also lost work because disabled people are workers too, and so are carers.
And your organisation is currently running a campaign to end mutual job obligations. Let's start from the beginning. What is mutual job obligations, and why are you calling for its removal?
Mutual obligations are the requirements the government puts on the people to be able to receive their New Start payment. We are campaigning to end them because they don't work and they punish people. They treat people as if, as I said before, it's their own fault for not being able to have waged work. It includes things like work for the dole, which, you know, Jeremy Poxon, one of our spokespeople for the AUWU, has been forced to work for 40 cents an hour on the Work for the Dole program. Obviously, he's not alone. That's really widespread. Other things include coercing people into taking expensive training programs that don't get them work but do give them large debts and further entrenching them in poverty. There's a really intense amount of job applications required per fortnight, so you might need, people do need to complete 20 job applications per month, and there just aren't the jobs out there. So all of this is designed, I think, to wear people down and to make them feel inadequate and to have no confidence and undeserving of, being able to live not in poverty and to be entitled to a good job.
If we could just go a bit back. So ministers, both former and current ministers, have made like outrageous comments about people who are on welfare benefits. Do you think government is out of touch?
Absolutely. I would be surprised if there's anyone in government at the moment who has had to try and survive on New Start in its current form, where it is at half the poverty line and the punishments, meted out under mutual obligations are so extreme. Most people in government would not even have anyone in their family living on New Start because they earn enough money that they can support members of their family. I just think that they have such a disconnect from the wider population that they can't imagine. And, we've seen this with the questions around, could you live on $40 a day? And either they refuse to answer it or they can't even conceive what that means. So they think $40 a day might mean $40 a day spending money, when, of course, $40 a day doesn't even come close to covering rent, bills and food, particularly if you live in a city where it's just not plausible anymore to get rent that is affordable and that comes even close to the very meagre rental payment that you can also receive.
And these statements are across party lines, so it's not just Liberal or Labor, right?
That's correct. We have a good example from last week where there was a motion in the Senate to call for the DSP to have the COVID supplement and the carers payment to receive that extra $550 a fortnight, and both the Coalition and the Labor Party declined to support that motion. So there's bipartisan support on the major parties for discriminating against disabled people at this point in time, and as I said, neither of them have taken any action to increase support to unemployed people since 1994.
And recently, because of COVID-19, the government introduced the coronavirus supplement. I've been able to purchase a few things that I couldn't before, and I'm sure there are others in similar situations. From the position of AUW, is it enough or does more need to be done?
Yeah, so I think at the moment we're calling to retain the $550 supplement because it just gets us over the poverty line, which I think is the bare minimum we should be asking for. Many people, including unionists, have said, or other unionists have said, that the $1,500 a fortnight JobKeeper payment is not possible for them to live on, and that is still nearly $400 more than JobSeeker after the supplement. So you know, at a bare minimum, we need to keep the supplement. Mm. And we need to keep it for the exact reason you said. The types of things that people are using that supplement for include fixing their car so they can actually try to access employment more easily, getting basics like pillows and pajamas. People are particularly grateful they've had it in time for winter. Paying bills off that have been accruing over time because they weren't able to afford it. And the most common one we hear is people able to buy fresh food and medication that they've previously deprived themselves of. So it's really common for us to hear stories normally without this supplement of people maybe going for one meal a day because that's all they can afford.
Kristen, how can people reach your organisation?
So we're online at auwu.org. We have a phone number on there for our helpline. So it's a free advocacy service. Any person who is confused about how to access income support, struggling to deal with Centrelink, not sure of their rights, can call us on 1-800-AUWU4U. And that is a free service, as I said. We've also got our Facebook page where you can send a message and you'll also be able to get free advice from our team there. And we're on Twitter at Oz Unemployment.
Excellent. Any final thoughts, comments, Kristen?
To highlight that people are disproportionately affected by this system. Older people, younger people, women and disabled people all have it worse off. That seems like a lot of people, and it's true. But the more disadvantaged you are, the harder it is to survive on this system and the harder it is to get back into the workforce.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ayan.
We hope you enjoyed that interview with Kristen O'Connell from the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. Don't forget, you can also stay in contact with the union via the Twitter handle Oz Unemployment and on Facebook at Unemployed Workers Union. We'll be back after these important community announcements.
You're listening to 3CR. We really are in unprecedented times, and 3CR, as your local community broadcaster, is trying to do our part to minimise the spread of the coronavirus throughout the community. At the front of our minds is protecting the most marginalised and vulnerable, but we are still here, and we'll continue broadcasting 24 hours a day with radical alternative content throughout this period. But things will sound a bit different. Some programmers will present their shows on the phone, and we'll be finding creative ways to bring you our regular programming. So stay tuned, stay safe, and be kind to each other.
On community stations right across Australia, you're listening to Woman on the Line. On this week's program, we've been looking at the COVID-19 supplement. As we mentioned earlier, people on income security payments are struggling to make ends meet. And even with the introduction of the COVID-19 supplement, more needs to be done to prevent families living below the poverty line. One group doing it hard, even before the pandemic, are single parents, especially single mothers. Claudia Craig from 3CR's Monday Breakfast Show recently spoke to Jenny Davidson, Chief Executive Officer at the Council of Single Mothers and Their Children. In this interview, they discussed the stigma attached to being a single parent, juggling parental responsibilities with work, and much, much more. We're only playing a short clip, but you can listen to the entire interview by searching Monday Breakfast on the 3CR website, www.3cr.org.au.
Now, you surveyed over 1,000 members of your organisation recently. What were some of the findings of the survey?
Look, the survey was very interesting. It was over 1,000 single mothers across the country, actually. So broader than our membership base, although we now have 4,000 members. What was interesting to see, so single mothers, the typical single mother is a little bit older than you know, the cliche. It's certainly not a young, unwed teen mother anymore. It's more typical is that it's a woman in their 40s with one or two children. The levels of education is quite diverse, as is the levels of employment. 65% of our survey respondents were in paid employment, so that ranges from casual through to full-time. And yet 53% of the 1,100 survey respondents had an annual income of less than $40,000. 44% had no savings whatsoever. So the financial hardship is quite clear. And that is irregardless not only of whether they're working or not. There's a lot of women who are working part-time, juggling parenting responsibilities, who are still in real financial dire straits. But it's also regardless of whether they, of whatever level of education they have, because there's a lot of women who have a level of education that with their parenting responsibilities, they can't translate into the paid work that would really change their financial position.
Can you just explore that a little bit further and explain why is it having that effect?
Well, look at that, you know, with the responsibilities of looking after your child and also the choices that women may want to make about not having their children, you know, in school and then after school care, you know, for 8 or 10 hours a day once you commute to a full-time job. So as soon as you take a part-time job because you have more carriage of the unpaid caring responsibility for those children, then obviously your earning capacity goes down. And often so does the job security. So there are plenty of single mothers that have a number of tertiary qualifications that are working from contract to contract, for example, that have no security. So if a contract ends, then they dip into their savings and pretty quickly they have no savings. Or they may be, we found, so there is a lot of work that's been done by other financial institutions around recovery from divorce. And often when a couple split up and they sell the house in order to split the asset, the studies found that men get back into the housing market at much higher rates than women do because women have more carriage of unpaid caring work and it constrains their earning capacity. So in our survey, what was a real standout to me was that 90% of survey respondents were concerned about their long-term financial well-being. So even if things were okay now, these women are looking down the track and they're saying, I don't own my home, my super is low, I don't have significant savings, what's going to happen to me in older age?
I expect that the COVID-19 crisis has been of particular concern to a lot of these women.
That's right. There's a lot of single mothers that work casually in order to fit with their family responsibilities. And a lot of those industries shut pretty quickly once lockdown went down. I mean, anyone working in hospitality, all sorts of industries, their jobs disappeared. And then for more professional women, it might have been a bit slower, but essentially they often have lost security or reduced hours, or they may have been made redundant. But then there are all the parents out there who are working from home while homeschooling. And that's a tough juggle for any parent. But as soon as there is no second parent to share some of that responsibility with, it is relentless and it's very difficult. I mean, the reality is that if you have a primary school aged child and they need you to sit by them to do schoolwork, then you can't work. It's an either or. You can do a little bit of they're in school and you're working, but the quality of their schooling and your work goes down pretty quickly. And we actually have had a drop in calls to our phone line because I guess if you're at home with a couple of kids now, it's really hard to make a phone call. So less calls, but more complex calls. But we had a huge amount of increase in traffic to our website where we had a special coronavirus page where we do have for single mother issues. And through our Facebook page because people are really concerned about how the stay-at-home directives affect them. And, of course, there's also a lot of low-income single mothers that are on the wrong side of the digital divide. They don't have the devices or they don't have the internet connectivity at home. Some of them also don't feel confident dealing with the technology, and those children are really disadvantaged. And we are concerned that disadvantage, that the lag in their education could have a long-term consequence for some of those families.
What actions are you taking at the moment to try and get assistance for those families?
We've been doing advocacy at a state and federal level along with all sorts of people across the sector. We were very pleased to see the increase in the benefits, parenting payment single and parenting payment couple were increased at the same rate as Newstart, which is of course now called JobSeeker. So those benefits went up. Families also got the coronavirus supplement, the $750 one-off payment. So there's been a bit of easing in the dire financial straits for single mother families who rely on benefits. But at the same time, you know, I mean, it's really tough parenting in isolation with children. And single mothers struggle with social isolation as it is. And all of those factors and, you know, the breach with all of your systems of support, whether they're friends or neighbours or your extended family, that drop-off has been really, really tough on parents and kids. And then you have the behavioural repercussions with the children, which I think a lot of parents are seeing. So there's lots of ways in which some of the experiences that we're all seeing out there as part of this pandemic is exacerbated for single mother families, particularly when they're financially constrained.
And it's also much more of a pressure cooker situation when everyone's up at home.
It's really tough. It's really tough. Some of the other issues that are really have been of concern in COVID is for families who have shared care for whom there might be a history of family violence. So we know that these sort of situations like a pandemic exacerbates family violence. It's really bad news for women that are living with a violent or threatening partner, but also for women who have shared care. All of their processes of handover and keeping safe might have all kind of collapsed. For instance, if you always did a handover at a play centre and it's no longer shut, and there's more pressures on those relationships, and it has put some women at risk and some children at risk as well.
That's very disturbing to hear. I noticed in your survey that there were quite a theme of additional stresses that was coming out, whether it be families that are caught up in the family law system, family violence, and an extraordinary number of participants with a disability, whether that be the parent carer themselves or the child they're caring for. Could you talk to that?
Yes, and we see that among the women. So we have a telephone support line and an email that single mothers can ring or workers can ring to get specific information for single mothers. And we get a lot of calls from women who either are carers or themselves have a disability. And of course, the carers and people on disability support pension have been left out of the boost to benefits that other benefits, the JobKeeper got and the parenting payment got. So they've been left behind. They may have had, so carers, for example, may have had casual work that was helping them survive. That's dropped off. The benefits haven't been increased. These families are really in dire straits, and we are very concerned about their well-being.
That sounds like an emergency situation.
Yes, it is. And so we do, and we are advocating at the state and federal level to have more benefits rolled out to these families. The non-profit sector is actually working really hard to try to ensure that the government is able to see some of these hidden pockets that they've somehow managed to skim over in there, there's quite a lot of money now by the JobKeeper, the job seeker and so forth, but it's not reaching everybody. And so we're really trying to make sure that the profile of some of those groups is raised with key decision makers. But also, of course, people were very concerned about those huge fines and penalties that were being threatened that could obliterate the financial situation of a family with a restricted income if they get a $1,600 fine or a $1,000 fine. So people were very concerned and stressed about that aspect of the pandemic as it rolled out.
So the mental health effects would be quite significant.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we're seeing there's a lot of stress, and anyone with mental health issues, this is not an ideal situation. Would it be exacerbated by being so isolated?
What are the messages that you're hoping to share to help alleviate some of that stress?
What we always talk about with single mothers, and this is why we encourage single mothers to join and membership's free for single mothers, that it's easier, that you're not alone, and that it's easier to do this on your own when you feel connected in with other people who are innocent.
Once again, we'd like to thank Claudia Craig for giving us permission to use that interview. For more information about the Council of Single Mothers and Their Children, go to www.csmc.org.au. You can also give them a ring on 03-9654-0622. That's 03-9654-0622. Today's show hits close to home. As a job seeker myself, the extra $550 was a welcome relief. So what did I do with that money? I bought a bed, enrolled in a business course, and now I can finally save up for a laptop. But I'm not the only one.
My name is Steph. I'm 33 and I'm a full-time student on AusStudy. I went back to uni this year to studied my postgraduate degree, and that was after almost 10 years of working full-time. I finally made the decision to not worry so much about money, well, to worry more, but not be so concerned with the amount of money I was getting. I've been working part-time in retail while I was studying, but I did get stood down at the end of March. Also, through having to go through the process of starting to claim again because I hadn't used, like I did go on JobSeeker a really long time ago, but I hadn't used a government service for quite a long time in that sense. And the whole process of trying to claim or study was really difficult. I originally made my claim before uni started, which was I submitted my claim at the end of February. I was originally told that I would hear back about halfway through April, so it was already a month and a half. Eventually, in May, I was approved. However, I needed to complete some tasks before I would actually receive any benefits, which was quite confusing because what they were asking me to complete were documents that I had already submitted with my initial application. And eventually I did get it sorted out, but it did give me a really sad insight to what it must be like for a lot of people, especially people who don't have reliable access to, you know, phones and mobiles and internet technology. I have found the $550 stimulus payment really helpful, but again, without that, it would be living, like, after I pay rent, it would be living below the poverty line. So it's helpful, but it's not, it's helpful to cover basic necessities.
And that's all for Woman on the Line today. Woman on the Line is a community radio national women's current affairs program. It's produced and presented by a range of women broadcasters from 3CR in Melbourne and broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network. We greatly appreciate financial support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. We welcome your comments or thoughts on today's show. So send us an email to womanontheline@gmail.com or give 3CR a ring on 03-9419-8377. Woman on the Line programs can be downloaded from our website, 3cr.org.au/womanontheline. Our new theme music is by Ripley Guevara, and the music during Steph's segment is from Purple Planet. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Ayan Sherwat.